Welcome to HeCast, the official podcast of He Changed. As always, I am Mike Chisholm. As always, I'm excited to be here. I'm a broken record with that introduction, yet guess what? It's true every single time. If you haven't downloaded the He Changed app, what are you waiting for? Please download it right now. Whatever your app store denomination is, whether it's Apple or Google, it is available. Search He Changed It. You will find the He Changed It app. Download it. Check it out. Watch the evolution of movement, of literally a movement to change the world. That's what we want to do. We want to have a resource available for men, an unprecedented resource that can literally change somebody's life. And thus the dominoes, the ripples, whatever analogy you want to use that will happen as a result. Also, if you wouldn't mind subscribing to sharing this particular broadcast, HeCast, we would love that. The He Changed It Overlords love their metrics, and we just would very much appreciate anybody who would take what we're doing and further it for us, whether it is in the neighborhood of comments, likes, shares, all of that crap. Thank you very much for helping get us to where we are right now. It's extremely exciting to be where we are and to watch this thing growing. And you ain't seen nothing yet. Lots of good stuff, as Johnny Carson liked to say. More to come. Anyway, today's episode is a really special one. I'm very excited that this gentleman has come here and said that he would share his story because it's a crazy story. It's one that, I'll tell you this, we've had a lot of husbands who have come to us behind the scenes, who have gone through things in their lives, in their marriages, in their relationships. A lot of guys in their relationships have burdened some pretty major shit, some things in the background that don't come forward, especially because of the stigmas that we have in our culture about abuse, about behaviors, you know, that we sometimes go through in the dynamics of relationships. And there's been a lot of guys who have come to us flat out abused and not willing to tell the story publicly, but needing help in that. We've actually got a guy here who's willing to talk about some of the things that he went through in a previous relationship that we're just really grateful because of how much learning and how much has come from that. As most of you know, if you've watched any or listened to any episodes of HeCast before now, you know I'm a huge music fan, massive, massive, massive music fan. Music is like, it's just, there's an authenticity in music. There is I'll say when I'm at the right rock concert or the right concert, whatever it might be, it's almost like a religious experience. I love music. I love the language of music. And we've got a local band where we're from in the region of Canada that we're from called Madhouse Tactics. We went and saw them not too long ago. And one of the players in that band, his name is Miles Mileto. Miles and my wife actually connected right as HeCast, as the infancy of HeCast. I don't even know if we're putting out episodes at that point or if we were just planning on it. And he told her a story that knocked her socks off from a He Changed It perspective, but also from a human perspective. And I am, we've been waiting for this to kind of happen, for all the things to align to make this happen. And Miles has finally made it into the HeCast studio. And we're really grateful for that. An amazing guy, an amazing musician with an amazing story. And he's willing to open up about that. Miles, thank you so much for taking time to be part of this here.
Thanks for having me.
I want to set the table a little bit. Scale of 1 to 10, your life right now. What would you say your life is right now in this day, at the date of this broadcast?
I'm going to say it's a 10.
It's right up there.
I'm pretty happy where I'm at.
Lots of good stuff going on.
You know what? It's so good. I don't have enough time to do it all. I wish I had more so I could keep doing all these things.
Work life is good. Family life is good. You've got the band, which is just this project that just injects all sorts of good things into those things and the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
I'm not overstating when I say those things.
No.
10 out of 10 life right now. Life is real.
You know what?
It's not perfect, of course.
There's lots of things that could probably go better. I could be a lot more rich. I could be a lot more famous, you know.
Sure.
But as far as I am and from my well-being, I'm in a good spot.
Okay. We're starting there. And believe it or not, to the folks who are watching and listening to this, we're going to finish there too. But there's some stuff in the middle that we're going to talk about today. But I think it's really important to talk about how satisfied and how life, how much, how you're living life in color right now, and how good things are. Mm. It's great to talk about that. Now, that being said, went through a lot of stuff to get to this place. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if you didn't go through that stuff, this place might not be, you might not be living the vibrant, colorful life that you're living right now because of the things that you learned along the way.
Guaranteed I wouldn't be.
Okay.
Guaranteed.
Okay.
It's all from what I learned.
Okay. What you learned, and you learned, we're Canadian, a metric shit ton of things going through what you went through. You lived a lot of life. I want to truncate a little bit. We're going to talk about, because there's tough relationships, that there's a lot of guys out there who are suffering in tough relationships. You've talked to some of these guys since going through what you've gone through. When you found out what Candy and her team are building, immediate attachment. Well, I mean, and I mean, I think I'm preaching to the choir being a little bit obvious here, but when you found out what that He Changed It was being formulated and going to be unleashed to the world, initial reactions, what was it about He Changed It that connected you to what we're doing here?
Yeah, you know, honestly, it was when I met Candace, I was invited on a radio show.
Yeah,
that was the first time I ever told my story. And just hearing the reaction of the people, the other guests that were on the show, and Candace's reaction, it was like, you know what? I need to kind of broaden my message if I can. I mean, I was still struggling with a lot of things myself, trying to refine it. I still struggle all the time, but I just get better at recovering. So yeah, I guess that was basically where it.
And the idea kind of, of an app or a resource for men, needless to say, sorely needed.
If somebody can go there and see examples, I mean, since it's available now, I'll check it and see, you know, what other people are going through and how they recovered.
Yeah. I want to get to the story, because I mean, I don't want to bury the lead here. These podcasts that we do, you know, they kind of go all over the place. This one here has a beginning, a middle, and an end that is still ending in good ways. And it's a happy ending right now. You married your high school sweetheart, needless to say. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah.
How old were you two when you met?
So I was about 13 years old.
Okay.
I'd met her before that, but we kind of were just interested in each other at 13.
At 13.
It was a little young.
Where were you? What city? What?
Summerlin.
In Summerlin, British Columbia.
Summerlin.
So we're in Western Canada, small town.
Very small town.
With a couple, you know, mid-sized towns surrounding it, but small town life.
Yeah.
You meet at 13, and you had gone through some stuff before then.
Yeah.
You know, now kind of looking back at the trail of breadcrumbs that led to where you are now, and knowing some of the things that you know about, you know, PTSD and things like that. Mm-hmm. You'd gone through some stuff at that point. Mm-hmm. Connected with her in childhood, and you guys just kind of stayed together, married before 20, right?
Yeah, I was 19. I think she was 20. I was 19.
Okay. So right around, you know, formative years, you know, a small town, needless to say, not a lot of, resources or, access or, well, even incentive for couples to be into a fine functioning, relationship, high functioning relationship. And this is a story that many people, have heard. Were you two dysfunctional at the beginning? Was it always there? Was it just habits that had developed?
It was a little dysfunctional. Yep. There was a religion issue. I'm not from a religious family.
Yeah.
My mom is the complete opposite.
Yep.
And she was trying to have a spiritual life, and I conflicted with that. So that created a lot of issues, but I was very open because it was all new to me.
Right.
So there was a little bit of chaos in trying to do the right thing, but, you know, being young and naive and letting emotions take over.
Yeah. Was there a lot of, we're in love, love's going to conquer all. We're not too young. We're, you know, we're going to do this. Was there any of that? Or was it pretty smooth sailing, in the sense of doors just opening for you to say, yeah, let's get married at this age?
No, it was not. It was definitely a ride.
Yeah.
And, it was on and off. In fact, I think it was the same year we got married. We weren't together for 4 months.
Okay.
So she had gone through something which kind of brought me back into the picture to try and, you know, I felt bad for her and we kind of rekindled at that point. But it was not a romantic thing. It was not a mature relationship by any means. Mm-hmm. And getting married young was not a good idea.
Well, and we've heard life coaches and different people. I've talked to all sorts of people since going on this journey with He Changed It, even in my limited role here, and talking about how guys many times have that, for lack of a better term, that white knight mentality that we want to save. We want to help. Was any of that there for you when you saw she was going through that time and you just wanted to?
I don't think so. I was very immature. Yeah. I had a difficult upbringing with my parents. I didn't see my dad a lot. He worked quite a bit and then they separated and I was just left with my mom and she was a difficult one to be raised by.
Yeah.
So there was a familiarity.
Yeah.
In this new relationship, but I was just not mature enough to, I was silly, you know, always trying to be the funny guy. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think it was probably, it was just not a responsible way to get into a relationship.
You're a kid.
I was a kid.
You're a kid.
I was a kid for a long time after that too.
Yeah. And then, but then suddenly forced to start doing some adulting.
I had to do adulting. I was a kid with kids.
And that started early on as well. And that was and I mean, that's the rock and the hard place, right? You know, we talk about all these needs for education about, you know, pregnancy and all that kind of stuff, you know, and people turn it into political issues and all that, but let's just look at the human issue. Tough choices when pregnancy shows up when you're that age, when you're not
Oh, she was ready to have kids when we were 18.
Right.
And I tried to start a business when I was 19. We had got married and 2 months later moved to Prince George, you know, 8 hours away. I didn't know anybody or anything and tried to start a business.
Becoming an entrepreneur at that time as well. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of big learning curves for you at a young age, Miles.
Yeah, exactly. And so she still at that point wanted to have kids and I don't understand it, but it wasn't until a couple years later that I was like, okay, you know what? I think I could do this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Candace to this day talks about your story. It's been like 2 years since she's heard it. Let's move into it. Let's just, you know, so you're married for a few years. Were the problems there already? Were they there right from the get-go?
They were there before we got married. Okay. There was a little bit of difficult circumstances regarding, I came to visit her. This was before we were even living together.
Yeah.
I came to visit her. She's in the carport and she's slamming a rock into her head. And I don't know if it was an attention thing. When I think back, I'm like, I wonder if it was attention or what the deal was. But that was like, it didn't really open my eyes. I wish I was mature enough to say, hey, this is a red flag.
Right.
So that created a lot of issues, you know, as far as a mental stability went. So
red flags get clouded by emotion very easily.
Yeah.
It's so easy when you don't have emotion involved and you're just looking at stone cold logic as to, oh, this isn't good or whatever. But then emotions cloud that shit, don't they?
Yeah. And I guess it was I had made this decision. So now I'm just going to move forward. I'm just going to roll with it. We got married. I'm going to do the best I can to be married.
Committed to it.
Exactly.
This is the bed we made. We're going to make this bed. We're going to, you know, figure it out.
Mm-hmm. We had a kid. Yep. I'm going to be the best dad I can. Or try to be.
Yep.
But it was difficult because there was a lot of anger on her side not just towards me, but she's just anger within her. So it was hard to find that happy medium to be a great loving dad and keep her happy.
Right.
Because now I'm, you know, away from everybody and everything I know
with a new wife. Yeah, you're isolated in a new place. Why Prince George?
It was just where the opportunity, I was working for a company here in Summerland.
Yeah.
And they were opening a new franchise.
Okay, I gotcha.
And they were opening it in Prince George and I had that opportunity. There was no buy-in. Perfect. So I had no money. I'm 19 years old. I had no money.
Yeah, and a lot of responsibility already. So yeah, no, I feel you. Okay. So one thing I want to make sure we precurse before we start moving down this path a little bit is, and again, I can say this with full authenticity behind people's backs, you are still extremely respectful. You're extremely respectful of all involved here. You're basically, you've got a story about this is what happened. This is how I dealt with it. This is where I was. This is where I am now. In no way are we trying to disrespect in any way, shape, or form anybody. I'm not putting words in your mouth by saying that, right?
No. You know, there's been multiple times when I've had to tell my story, and I don't want to ruffle any feathers any more than they already are. But the story needs to be told, and there's just some things you can't avoid.
Yes.
But at the same time, like you said, be respectful about it. I'm not trying to create a war.
No.
I'm just trying to help where I can.
Okay. And that's who you are. And that's what we're doing here today. That's what we want to do here today. So let's start moving into it a little bit as the marriage progressed. You know, you see, yeah, things, especially with hindsight now, being able to look back and say, oh yeah, there was a warning sign right there. Mm-hmm. Didn't see it at the time. And mm-hmm. isn't that life? Right. But isn't it nice when we can take a look at some of these things in life, and regard them, record them, regard them. And so we can avoid potholes in the future, or speed bumps, whatever you want to call it, giant chasms of doom. We can avoid those things.
Yeah.
And I think it's safe to say you've got a whole bunch of those. When was it that it really started to get bad in the relationship?
I guess it was then. It was when we had moved away. Yeah. We had moved away. We had had a child. And it was tough to be that young and not have a lot of family and friends to help out mm-hmm. with raising a kid. We didn't know what we were doing. Mm-hmm. You know, the internet wasn't readily available like it is now.
Yeah.
And it was tough. It was tough in trying to keep my family as balanced as it could and still dealing with my own past from my upbringing.
Yeah.
It was hard.
Give us an example of something that's hard. Like, is it because of confrontations that would happen, traumatic events that would happen? What are we talking about?
So we bring home a brand new baby.
Yeah.
And he won't stop crying.
Right.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's a brand new baby. He won't stop crying. Well, she's getting angry. It's making me angry. I'm getting angry and I'm yelling at this little baby.
Yeah.
2 a.m. Cause we can't sleep.
Yep.
And this was all new and I don't know what else to do. And I'm yelling at this baby. So that was kind of a precursor mm-hmm. to how the rest of the relationship was going to go. There was a lot of anger. There was a lot of yelling. And it started to get a little bit more physical after that. Any situation, any problem that came was my fault. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter. Mm-hmm. If the car breaks down, it was something I did.
Yeah.
So, or, you know, a car accident. Well, it's my fault.
Just blamed for everything.
Blamed for everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's hard.
Yeah.
Was there fear or trepidation to like come home? Like, what am I coming home to today? Were there moments of bliss as well that tempered this, or was it constant?
Yeah, it was, I did not like being home. Mm-hmm. I did not like it, but I spent a lot of time at the arcade back then.
What was your game of choice?
It was
a Street Fighter 2 guy.
It was Virtua Fighter.
Virtua Fighter. I'm a Virtua Fighter guy too. Wolf was my guy.
Yeah.
You played a lot. Okay, so escape. There was some escape. There was
a lot of escape.
And that's I think escape is different. I talk about self care all the time. We talk about this because you know when you're going through something, it's very important. Self care is extremely important, mm-hmm. right? You got to stay hydrated so you can hydrate others. If you become a dry sponge, you can't do it anymore. That's the analogy we've been mm-hmm. using lately. This is different. This isn't just self care. This was something different.
This was not self care. This was a Band-Aid. You know, it was. A little bit of relief for the moment, but then I knew I was going home. was going home to, you know, not measuring up anymore. Not being good enough at anything. You know, not bringing enough money, not being a good enough dad, not, you know, I got blamed a lot for isolating us, you know, away from home.
Right.
But at that, again, you still roll with it and you try to make it better.
So when that was happening, I mean, and I think there's a lot of guys out there who can relate to being blamed for things and also whether it's genetic, you know, we talk about the hunter-gatherer, the primal of what makes men, men, you know, that are there. Hard not to take that on the chin when we have this, many of us have this instinct that we want to take care of and have all these things. And at the end of the day, let it be known to those around us that we are enough. So we can maybe think that we might be enough. You never felt that.
No, it was a constant. I'm trying to be the person she wanted me to be.
And what was that person? Was it possible? Like at the end of the day, looking back with hindsight, was it possible for you to be what she wanted you to be?
What she wanted, even if I was, yep. She wouldn't see it.
Right.
So she wanted me to be much more like her dad. He was a hunter. Okay. You know, he was an outdoorsman. I wasn't. I was the opposite. I liked my video games.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And at that time I had given up music for the family.
Yeah.
So that was kind of out of the picture. And anytime I tried, there were issues there. Which we can maybe talk about later, but I wasn't that rugged guy that I think she wanted.
Okay.
And I, now that we're talking, I remember there was a time we actually didn't last in Prince George. So it was, my son was about 9 months old.
Yep.
We moved back to Summerland.
Yep.
The business didn't work out.
Yep.
And, I can remember sitting on the floor and she's sitting in a chair and I was just begging her to love me with this 9 month old baby. And she says, I could never love you because I love somebody else. And I lived with that for another 14 years, knowing that.
Was that an actual, there was a person that she's like talking about, in the heat of a moment where it's like, okay, but like, or was there a 14 year there's somebody else there that.
Yeah. She admired, a guy who was about 8 years older than us.
Okay.
Kind of was teaching her some spiritual things and, you know, she really admired that part of him.
Yeah.
He was way more mature than I was.
Sure.
And I'm just speculating. I don't know that it was him.
Yeah.
I, you know,
no, but the thing said though, that you're talking about it X amount of years later, like that's the kind of impressionable stuff that when, you know, and you're begging this person to love you.
Yeah.
That's a very vulnerable place right there. And again, almost primal, you know, it's a basic human, love is a basic human need.
Yeah.
And when you're asking to be loved and that person rebuffs or mocks or steps on it.
Yeah.
That's something that would carry with you.
Yeah. And at that time I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what love was because I didn't feel it from my mom and my dad was, he wasn't around.
Right.
They had separated. I only saw him, 2 weekends a month. And it was more of them reprogramming me from the way I, you know, am with my mom.
Right.
To trying to spend time with my dad. And I know it couldn't have been easy for him. It had to have been difficult.
As the relationship progressed, that's a reprogramming is exactly what happened to you, right? And I mean, you know, you've worked your ass off to unprogram this reprogramming that happened. But let's go into it a little bit more as to some of the things you experienced along the way.
As far as the reprogramming or why I needed to.
Yeah, why you needed to. Like,
Well, for instance, if we stay on the topic of this, of who she loved, really grown fond of a friend of mine in Prince George.
Yeah.
We had gotten pretty close. I have no siblings, but I really viewed him as a brother.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, for the first time, I thought that I was caring for somebody like family.
Yeah.
Well, a time came when I found out that they were having a private relationship. It wasn't physical because he was so far away.
Right.
But at that time I was working two jobs. I think it was only two jobs at that time. Worked day doing stucco, and at night I was working for the newspaper. So I was out driving, and I'd have to leave about 1 or 1:30 in the morning, and he would phone her. And they'd have these intimate conversations. And the only reason I know that is because his wife phoned me. And hysterically yelling at me. I'm like, I don't have anything to do with this. I don't even know what you're talking about. I had no idea.
Oh my goodness.
And that wasn't the only time that that happened.
Right.
About 6 months later, my current friend in the town we were living in, I had come home. It was winter. And I saw these tire tracks in the driveway. And I go, oh, was he here today? And she goes, oh, yeah, he was just dropping something off. And I'm like, okay. And I come home the next day early, and he's in my house. And they're sitting there having tea. Well, I found out a little while later that he had written her a letter asking her to run off with him. So they obviously had a relationship going on there. So this was in a span of a year. I lost my two best friends.
Oh, God, that's hard. So I'm going to be the guy right now that doesn't have any emotion. Why'd you stay?
My kids.
Okay.
It was the right thing to do. You know, you don't leave. You do what you can. You know, you entered this marriage and you had kids. Your responsibility is to stick it out.
Yeah. How many kids do you have?
Three.
You have three kids. What are the ages now?
26, 24, and 22, I think.
Relationship with them, how's that?
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to go back to this part of life right now before we go back into that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had basically raised my boys. They were 15 and 13 when they moved in with me.
Yeah.
And so we get along well. My oldest he's living a couple provinces over.
Yeah.
And my daughter stayed with her mom because she wanted to go to school where her mom was living.
Yep.
She was only 10 years old at the time.
Yep.
And she got taken away from me when her mom decided to move to Edmonton. So her and I have had this kind of on off as far as time wise.
Yeah.
She ended up living with us for a couple of years, but it was very difficult. She was going through those teenage years and not having a lot of direction before that was mm-hmm. really hard on the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so she ended up going back to her mom's, who was now living in Victoria.
Right.
But I still talk to her. In fact, at our last show, she surprised me. I had no idea she was coming, and
I was at?
The one you were at.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I had no idea. She,
are you kidding me?
Yeah. She came running over, and I hadn't seen her in a couple of years, and so we do. We have a good relationship.
Oh, that's delightful.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. just made my day. Well, just that was such a good night. We saw, Madhouse Tactics a couple months ago, I guess now. Yeah. And it was a great night, and your dad was there and all this sort of stuff. I didn't realize the daughter was there as well. And that's beautiful to hear that. And it's beautiful to hear that she can help support the things that fill your tank. You know, music is clearly something that fills your tank. You gave it up.
Yeah.
Clearly, I mean, looking back, looking at the past, giving up something like that. Because, I mean, men can't, if we have an interest in some of these things, you know, if you have an interest in hockey, you don't have to go to the NHL. You can, there are ways that you can scratch that itch and feel fulfilled. And you have energy for some of these other things or whatever. But when you start isolating these things that make you and giving them up, and music is clearly something that is so close to you. Giving that stuff up, you're giving a part of yourself away and contributing to what we have in the society, which is a bunch of guys out there who don't know who they are. They don't know what their purpose is, things like that. And it's almost like a bit of torture where you're in this horrible situation. And then also all these things that make you are being picked away and put in a closet.
Yeah. Because what made me, created conflict. So I had acquired a guitar and wanted to play. I wanted to have friends to play with.
Yep.
But every time I did, it was drawing attention on me, and she didn't like that. So one time I came home from work and there were blue splinters all over my driveway.
Oh my God.
She had taken my acoustic guitar and thrown it off the deck and then went down and got it and brought it up and threw it down again. There was other times too when she ruined my equipment and kind of went down that road.
Okay, so we've already established the emotional stuff a little bit here. I mean, and I'm sure we're going to get into some more of that. Scarring type things. Mm. That's a scarring thing. Oh,
yeah.
You take somebody's favorite anything, whatever it is, and you smash it, you do whatever, you know, with their sentimental value. I mean, yeah, that's going to be scarring. Mm. But then there's also a violent act there as well. And you saw a plethora of both as the years progressed. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about some of the things that you went through when it came to those things?
She used to have a janitorial business.
Yep.
And it was a commercial building that where we were working at, and the alarm went off when we went in. And I didn't have the contact number to phone to shut the alarm off.
Right.
She wanted me to do it. I'm like, I don't have the number. I don't have the number. Yeah, you got to give me the number.
Yeah.
And so she grabbed my face and dug her fingernails into my face. You know, I was in my house for a couple of weeks because I didn't want anybody else to know that she had done that, because they're from the cuts. So that was one instance. Don't remember your question.
Well, I appreciate you. I appreciate you're able to say that right now. I mean, I know that there are things that you blocked out. There are things that the kids reminded you of. There are things that along the way. So, but you're painting the picture here of some of the things. And it was constant. Would there be a week that went by without violence? Was there always violence? Was it just isolated incidences that would blow up and then result from it? Or were you kind of constantly having to have your guard up because it could be unpredictable?
Oh yeah. Guard was up. She could, I wouldn't even be looking at her and she'd walk in the room and I'd know what was in her hand without seeing it. Because you're listening, you know, subconsciously, you're listening to what's going on around you.
And what were some of the things that would be in her hand?
Oh, it wouldn't even matter.
Okay.
It wouldn't even be a violent thing she was going to do with it. I just knew.
You were always hyper aware of that.
I knew where she was, what she'd been doing, or trying to put together what she was doing while I'm watching TV or something. You know, there came a point, going back to some of the things that I went through, I had, one of the kids had come home with chicken pox.
Okay.
She's had chicken pox.
Okay.
None of us have had chicken pox. I never had chicken pox.
Oh, man. Okay.
She had to go out that night and she wanted me to stay with him. I'm like, I've never had chicken pox. I was going to stay in a hotel because you don't want it as
with an adult. It can be a different deal entirely. Yeah.
Yeah. So I stayed with him and, a few days later I got chicken pox. So I did 12, 13 days with chicken pox on my own because she was gone. And I tell you, that was a horrible experience.
So there's a lack of empathy there as well.
Lack of empathy. She had gone out to a gathering of our friends.
Yeah.
And when she came home, she dropped this piece of cake down on the table and she goes, your friend sent this home for you. And then she was gone. So I was on my own for that.
And this is again, is the answer always when I say, well, why didn't you leave? And I mean, it's so funny that you know, that men get into this situation, but there are literally tens of thousands of men right now who are in similar situations where they're not standing up, where they're being treated this way and they're not standing up for themselves. And you ask the question, why, you know, and the logical, well, because of the kids, because I made a promise, because I like, is that always what it was? Or was there a fear of like, had you been reduced in this place to a fear of not being able to stand up anymore, like for yourself?
Probably a little bit too. And some of it was a more of a safety thing. She was not going to let it go. If I left, there was no way she was going to let that go. She would torment me somehow.
Fear of losing the kids, fear of being
She wasn't afraid.
No, you weren't. No, I'm saying.
Yeah. You know, and then of course there was a lot of times she was trying to get me to hit her. So she'd hit me, getting me to hit her so that she could now have an excuse to get out.
And we've behind the scenes, we've been hearing a lot of these and researching and what we're, you know, it's a measure twice, cut once situation. But the stats that we've been hearing about provoked, you know, obviously with our system, which is nowhere near perfect, the side falls for, you know, women being abused as opposed to men being abused. They don't, it's not policed the same. It's not reported the same, even with police. And again, I'm using broad strokes here because obviously there's exceptions to everything, but there's a lot of guys out there who are being physically abused. And if they even stand up to try and report it, the provoking thing, which is a major thing, like how many times have we met somebody and they find out our buttons and they just push our buttons and push our buttons and push our buttons. That was a daily thing with you, right?
Oh yeah.
Where those buttons are being pushed.
Yeah.
You know, and again, we're not focusing on this, but we got to paint the picture because there are guys who are dealing with this. What was the worst violence that you ever had against you?
So at one point she had, she used to play that little head game where she was going to kill herself. She said she was going to kill herself because she hated being with me so much. And she said she was going to go down to the road and stand in front of a truck, which, you know, I didn't believe her, but I still didn't want her to go. So I grabbed her to prevent her from leaving, just basically bear hug. But we had a sliding door that had a locking pin. You would take it out. From the bottom of it.
Yep.
It had a sharp point on it. So this was in her hand when I bear hugged her. So she stabbed me in the back and four times and twice in the head with it. So that, you know, that's kind of that it would get to that point. But there was a few things that were kind of like that. Some of it was after she had found out that now we're jumping way ahead to where I had started a relationship with somebody else behind her back.
Yeah.
She had found out about that and we still tried to make it work. But she was not happy. So now it kind of gave her a reason to be aggressive. And, you know, at one point she's sitting in the tub and I'm sitting on the floor talking to her and she just reached out, grabbed my head and slammed it in the tub. Now I have this massive bruise. It was there for a week. My kids want to know what's going on. So you make up a story and feel guilty for that. And around that time, I guess it was actually the time she found out about the relationship, she had gone to go find the other girl and she wasn't there. So when she came back, I'm standing in the driveway with a friend of mine who I called to tell him, you know, this is going on. I need you here because it's about to escalate. And she ran right over me. Yeah, she hit me. I went under the van and she had put it into a bank so it lifted the front end up a bit. So I was able to climb out from the side. And when I, on my trying to climb out, she had run around and then she's trying to kick me as I'm getting up. And my friend was there to restrain her and she started kicking him. So.
Did the police get involved with that incident?
No, he threatened to. That's when she started attacking him is when he's like, I'm going to have to phone the police. And she started attacking him.
Okay. How many times throughout your relationship were the police ever involved?
Zero
times. And she never tried calling them on you. Like there was never. Okay. Because I mean, we've met with guys who that's the situation too, where the provoking happens if there's a shove or out of defense or whatever. Yeah. And then that narrative is created as well, unfortunately. And these are real situations that real guys are going through. And I just applaud you. And I'm so grateful that you're willing to kind of talk about this stuff here. And again, life is 10 out of 10 now. Mm-hmm. Life is good.
Life is good.
But at the end of the day, I mean, these are real situations. I'm going to ask a really hard question and I'm sorry about this. You stayed together for the kids. The kids saw some horrible shit. It's a no-win situation. I'm just asking you this for guys that are in that situation right now, food for thought, because there is no perfect answer and it's an impossible thing. What was the worst thing your kids saw? Did your kids see anything like that extreme? Or was she, I don't want to even say calculating enough, but just was she at the point where it's like, okay, I'm going to shield that from the kids. And this is only going to happen when he's alone, thus isolating and all that kind of a stuff. I'm not sure what would be, is it a combination of both?
They heard, I don't think they saw very much.
Yeah.
Most, they would have heard it though, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, she was aggressive with them.
Yeah.
She would pinch them till they bled. You know, obviously a lot of yelling.
Yeah.
But no, I don't, they would see the effect. Yeah. You know, if I was cut or something, they would know that.
And they would, yeah. Kids are smart.
Yeah.
They put two and two together.
Well, yeah. You know, when I tried to make up some story and I admitted, I told them later, you know, years later that what had actually happened. So,
yeah.
You know, when they're 9 and 10 years old, I was doing my best to shelter them.
Yeah.
From what really happened.
And again, that's the no-win situation too, because you say, okay, well, I'm going to leave. Well, that's great. But then what if they end up 100% because you're the protective of them too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are, I'm painting a picture that those are the feelings that you were feeling at the time, or was it?
Well, yeah, I didn't feel that they were safe. So if I leave and I don't take them with me,
mm-hmm.
which is going to create a whole nother war,
mm-hmm.
then they're not safe, and it's better for me to stay there.
You're going through this stuff. Happens, chain reactions. You know, one thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. I mean, obviously, you're a human. You're, you know, trying to find, you know, love or caring in other places, that kind of a thing. Other relationships started up. I mean, you know, you're not, none of us are perfect ever. You know, was that near the end, a turning point when it was like, okay, enough is enough. It's time to change something. What was your, I know that there's a rock bottom moment. Are we at the rock bottom moment, or is there anything that we need to talk about to set the table before the rock bottom moment? I mean, I know there's so much.
There's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of little things, you know, multiple times telling me how she hated our last name. She didn't want our last name because she hated the thought of being married to me. Little head yeah. game things that they were frequent. She had sold my dog one day when I was at work.
My God.
Little things that when you add them all together, there's a huge volume of things that you're constantly trying to recover from.
Yeah.
But then she had confided in a friend of hers, you know, kind of where our relationship was at.
Yeah.
And it was a relative of that friend who got wind of it, who herself was in a very extremely bad relationship. And I used to run my dog at night just because I liked the dark.
Yeah.
And she knew where I ran. And she met me on the path one day. And I thought, this is weird. You know, I didn't think anything of it at the time, but she was there the next night too. And I was already, just before that, I talked to a friend of mine saying, look, you know what? I can't. If somebody comes along, it was about 3 months before that. I said, if somebody comes along, I'm not going to be able to do this anymore. Like,
yeah,
I'm going to go my separate ways. And so he tried talking to her. He was kind of a spiritual counselor to us,
yeah,
and trying to solve things that way. And it happened.
Yeah.
It happened. And that relationship didn't work out, but it didn't work out because we didn't get along. It was just too complex of a situation.
Yeah.
But it was the first time in my life that I ever felt cared for. Yeah. So I was about 35 years old, I think, by then.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first time that I really knew that I felt cared for.
Wow. Complex. This is all complex.
Yeah.
So that's a light bulb moment in some ways. Was that empowerment? Was that, because I mean, the strength to do what you did and how you did it and some of the things that, you know, you clearly had to have some empowerment there. I mean, was that a...
You know what? It was just something I was drawn to. I was drawn to that attention and that level of care. And I really wanted to have that in my life.
Okay. So you knew that this existed now. You knew that that was a possible thing. And it's like, oh, there is something different than what I've experienced.
Yeah.
Literally my whole life.
Yeah. And that relationship, you know, was almost a year long.
Yep.
But there was talks about, you know, getting married.
Yeah.
You know, living this life together. So it was a spark.
Okay.
It wasn't, I don't think it was a light bulb moment.
Yep.
But it started a chain reaction to bring the end.
Okay. So let's continue down that chain reaction then. Let's progress it and
okay.
get to the changing, and thank God again, 10 out of 10 now, but it doesn't happen without
So that once my ex got wind of that relationship,
yes,
the hostility escalated. That's when, you know,
I struggled with the van.
I got run over. and not just her, it was the other girl's husband as well. You know, he showed up at my door and threatened me. And that was a tough thing. He ended up moving away with her to get her away from me, mm-hmm. because we would still meet even after this was all found out. You know, we would meet privately. But, you know, I tried to make it work. I tried to make that work for a year, but it was now we are definitely not going to live together.
Yeah.
So, with my ex, I mean.
Yes.
So she ended up moving out right away.
Okay.
Actually, I think it was a few days later. I think we tried for a week to make it work, but I had to have somebody there with me because she was violent. You know, I had fallen asleep on the floor. And I woke up to her kicking me in the stomach. And he had actually, that was right after he had gone home. So he was there for a few days, keeping an eye on me.
And the moment he leaves.
He's like, it seems pretty good. And And then so he came back, and that was when it was kind of like.
This is a question that I think needs to be answered, because there's a lot of guys who are living in this situation where there are moments of lucidity or moments of admission. Did she know that her behavior, I don't even want to say isn't normal, isn't appropriate? Did she know that she was violent? Like, did she ever admit to that along the way? Or was it, this is how it is, and this is how I act, this is how I am? There's no even discussion about it? Like, no,
I don't think there's a conscience to that, a consciousness to that.
Okay.
And if there was, it was validated.
Right.
Especially now.
Yeah. She had the
right to be that way.
Yeah. Oh man. So, okay. Where do we go from there? You try to make it work for a year. You wake up her kicking you. Clearly, at some point a decision is going to be made. What was your rock bottom in this thing? Cause it, you know, there's a time you ended up in the hospital on your own, by your own accord. And thank goodness for that. Like, is that right close to this moment, or is there,
it was probably two months later. Maybe.
Okay.
Trying to remember the timeline, but so she had left.
Yep.
She had finally left. She took whatever money we had, which wasn't much. We were quite poor.
Was there relief when she left, or was it still she was lobbing things from afar?
Yeah, she was lobbing. She'd still come in my house. She'd go through my mail.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
You know, she'd, you know, question about this and that, and you know, still there, and we, you know, still had kids to deal with.
Yeah.
So she was gone. My best friend believed her. She told the story about what a horrible person I am.
Right.
He believed her.
Thank God there was no social media at that point.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
She ended up living part-time with him and his wife.
Okay.
And when, so they were gone. This was during the recession.
Yep.
So I had no work.
Yep.
I had one job that was going to last me a few months. I'd have a little bit of money, but it wasn't enough to survive. So I had lost that. My kids are, you know, gone half the week before I got to see them again. It was a kind of a process we went through in separating, that we had a mediator who decided, you know, who would get the kids for.
So the government's involved now?
kind of
social assistance as well.
Yeah. So at this point, when I had no money and all of that, I had to go to social assistance. Yeah. I was, you know, had an eviction. I got evicted from my house. Went to social assistance. They were giving me $1,070 a month, and my rent was $1,040. So because of that, I ended up evicted. Just couldn't afford it. But that $30, you know, while I was trying to stay in the house for the kids, so they all have their own bedrooms, that was all the money I had to feed them. So the 3.5 days that they were with their mom, I just didn't eat. And then they'd come and we'd eat junk food because it was all I could afford.
Yeah.
Kraft dinner, hot dogs.
Yep.
Spaghetti. Yeah. Whatever we could. At one point the power got cut off because I couldn't pay the power bill.
Yeah.
And I think the one time my mom ever, maybe the second time my mom ever helped me out, she gave me $500 for food and to pay my power bill. But I was going after my ex because we had owed in back taxes and the child tax benefit.
Right. Yeah. You're not getting that
goes to her.
Yep.
So she had a huge amount. It was over $6,000. And I just said, look, I just need some of it. You know, at least pay my power bill.
Yeah.
She said, no, nothing. Got nothing. So I was in the dark. So she kept the kids because there was no way I was going to get them.
I have to say it again, 10 out of 10 life right now.
Because
there are guys right now who are in the shit right now, Miles. And I'm just like, thank you for saying this stuff. There are guys who are there right now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you this question at this point in the story. What insights do you have for those guys who are there right now?
There's hope.
Thank you. Yes.
There is solutions. There is a lot of resources. Now. And I think what it ultimately comes down is courage. I'll continue this story because it actually goes a little bit
perfect. Yeah.
More into the hole. So at this point, it's dark, no money.
Literally and figuratively, it's dark.
Yes. I had no friends. They all believed her as well. No friends. You know, my family a little bit, but I had no way to get to them. My dad lived two cities over. So I thought, this is it. You know, what's the point of living? So because the girl I wanted to be with was gone and had basically decided she's going to try and make her relationship with her husband work. So that was out. And I just didn't see what the point was. And I had a big shop that had no ceiling in it, just rafters, and I had a long extension cord. And I went out there and I was just threw that extension cord over that rafter. I was ready to tie that knot. And for some reason, I phoned my friend. And I don't know if it was because I feared for my kids or it was just an impulse.
Yeah.
But I found that friend that didn't believe me. And I just said to him, you have to come to my house right now to look after my kids. And he did. He hung up the phone. Took him about 6 minutes to get there, which was the longest 6 minutes of my life, trying to not go through with what I had pretty much committed myself to go through. And he was there and he goes, what's wrong? I said, I'm going to the hospital. And I got in my car and drove to the hospital and told him, I just tried to kill myself. And they hospitalized me for 4 days on suicide watch.
Yeah.
Now to go back to, I talked about courage.
Yeah.
So prior to this, a friend of mine, she had known through a misunderstanding, she had found out how difficult my relationship was. And I had first started confiding in her, not on a romantic level, but just as someone I could express my feelings to. She had given me a bracelet that she had made. It was leather and it said the word courage on it. And I always had that. man, this makes a lot of sense. But eventually I had lost it. Then the girl that I was trying to have a relationship with, she had made me a new one. And I had that bracelet that said courage on it. And so when I'm in the hospital and I'm lying in that bed, after the psychiatrist comes and has a evaluation with me and the nurse is there, I'd have that bracelet and I could just look at it and say, this is what's going to help me get through this. And so I had it for quite a while. And it eventually wore out. And jump way ahead to the future to my new relationship with my new wife. She had a nice stainless steel one made for me and engraved the word courage on it. Oh. Yeah. Because she knows how important that is. And it is. I think about it all the time.
For guys out there who are dealing with this thing, and you know, we use the word courage. I think it's very important also to note that if you pretend you have courage, it's the exact same thing as actually having the courage. Because sometimes we don't think that we actually have the ability to, we have to act like we have it. But if we act like we have courage, it's the same thing. And you do have it. You do have it. It's dark right now, but you do have it to get through.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard in that moment to find it.
Yeah.
You have to. I think you have to have constant reminders.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this bracelet I have now, I don't always wear it because it does fall off. I lost it at a convention one time.
Oh, no.
But found it.
Yeah.
Got it back.
Yeah.
So, but it's so helpful when I have it. So that's next year's tattoo project.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
It's going to become permanent.
It is. It is. Then I'll always have it there. I can always just a little reminder.
Yeah. Was the hospitalization, was that the rock bottom moment?
I think so. I think just prior to it, yeah. When I was ready to end it all.
Yeah.
I think that was where I was done.
Do you remember when you started to get tools to help you with this? Cause I mean, again, along the way you had some friends here and there, you had some, you know, potentially, you know, I don't want to say incorrect, but ways that weren't necessarily the best tools, to deal with things, you know, now you're starting at this point here to actually learn some concrete things to help you. Things that if you just had as skills or tools along the way, you know, some of the stuff could have been avoided. And I think that's where we're in this era of mindfulness that's showing up now. And I mean, that's what He Changed It certainly wants to be, is a resource rich, you know, tool that guys can take all sorts of stuff from the toolbox that can help them early on. After the hospitalization, what was one of those early tools that you got that helped you cope or helped you start to get out of the dirt?
Yeah. So coming out of the hospital, you know, I had a psychiatrist and a mental health worker.
And I would assume a plethora of diagnoses as well.
Yeah. You know, I went through two psychiatrists because I really wanted help. And the first one just didn't seem to be listening.
Okay.
And the second one just loved the drama of the story. And he just right away put me on medication. And I didn't want medication. I mean, it helped. I mean, it helped immensely.
Sure.
Because now, for the first time in my life, I wasn't on guard.
Oh, so there's a clear head there with...
It wasn't clear, but okay. I wasn't on guard.
Okay, fair enough.
So the nightmares were unbelievable. You know, I would dream about being killed in various ways by people that I thought I cared about.
This is on medication or off medication?
This is
like leading up to why question. The medication was there.
I think it was both. It was both.
Wow.
Yeah. So because of that, they had put me on an antipsychotic.
Okay.
To try to eliminate or reduce the amount of the nightmares I was having. I was changing sheets more than twice a night. Yeah. And it was interesting because my wife just told me yesterday that there was a long period where I was in bed. I don't remember that. After we got married. So we were married about almost 10 years ago.
Yep.
There was a period I was just in bed all the time And I don't remember that. She goes, wow. You had the freedom now to cope with your entire past. And that's what it was. So the psychiatrist had me on this medication. One was an antidepressant,
yep.
and the other one was antipsychotic.
Yeah.
But I didn't like that. And then I got referred to a program for abused men.
Yeah.
So here in BC, it could be Canada wide, women counseling is supported by the government.
Right.
Men's counseling wasn't, at least at that time. I don't know if it is now.
Yeah.
But that time it wasn't. So I was referred to a counselor who worked with women, and she volunteered her time one day a week to work with men.
Wow.
So I went for an intake there, and she said, just so you know, I have 29 men in my program. I have 32 on the wait list. And I'm like, okay. You know, I thought, okay, here's another dead end. I got to figure out something else.
Yeah.
So she did the intake. And 6 days later, I was in the program. I got bumped to the top of the list because of how bad it was.
The severity.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was in her program for 9 months.
Yep.
Which changed my life. She was brilliant. I went in there and told her basically how my ex would describe me. And she just said, bullshit. You know?
Yeah.
I go, how could you possibly know that? And she goes, well, this is what I think. And she kind of just said a few things, not really knowing my story. And there was a surreal moment. There were two surreal moments while I was in her program.
Yeah.
One was I was still going, sorting things out with the ex.
Yeah.
And I would tell her, okay, well, I'm meeting the ex about this kind of situation. And she goes, all right, well, this is what she's going to say. And she listed off a bunch of things.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, right. So then I'm there. I'm in the moment. And she's saying word for word what was said to me.
Gosh.
I don't know what it was because I wasn't paying any attention.
It doesn't matter. You're just in awe of. Oh. Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah.
That was a very eye-opening moment. And that, you know, I went in there wanting to fix myself. I cold turkeyed the medication, which she did was not happy about because insomnia is a side effect of getting off an antipsychotic. Well, at least that one, I guess. Anyway.
Yep.
But I did it because I didn't want a Band-Aid. I wanted to know that I was getting better.
Yeah.
So there was that moment. And then the other moment was I showed up early to one of my counseling sessions.
Yeah.
And she had run a little long with the guy before me. And he walked out that door and I saw him. And I realized I wasn't alone. That there is other men, even though she threw a number at me and how many were waiting to be in there.
Yeah, but
it wasn't real until
until
I saw somebody there. And from that moment on, I was like, I'm just going to try and digest everything she says. She would do things that were very awkward for me, very uncomfortable. And I think about them now and they're so easy. Close your eyes and just list 5 things that you can hear. But I couldn't even do that. I was too embarrassed, too ashamed. I don't know what it was, but I was not comfortable doing that. But she would make me do it. And then she would test me, you know, put yourself in an uncomfortable situation. So I went to a party where I only knew one person.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah.
I mean, the party wasn't awesome, but it was uncomfortable. And that was the beginning of me trying to be around people. But those tools she gave me, And just my faith in her ability, I use every day. And I've taught other people. And I think that's what's really helped is I've been able to help other people. Like my wife now, she went through a difficult first relationship and then raising her son on her own. You know, we had 4 teenagers and it was kind of like, okay, well, this is what's going on. Because you learned part of my program, the counseling program was to read body language. And at that time, I wasn't very good at it, but you get better and better and better at being able to read tone of voice and, you know, how people hold themselves. And,
right.
And that was something I was able to start teaching other people. And that just started me down a road of continuing to better myself.
I love how you want to help others. I love that. Like again, you were enthusiastic about wanting to come here and tell this very difficult story about what you've gone through. And it's the most personal. So, I mean, a parent, like you talk about the emotions attached to this. I don't know if there's any other emotions that are tighter than being a parent. And that is tightly woven with your story. I don't know if you could be more personal. Hmm. And the enthusiasm to talk about this to help other guys, it's like right at the top of your list of priorities of things that fill you. You can just see it. It just comes from you talking about this. Thank you very much, by the way, for talking about these things. Thank you for being, you know, there is, you talk about courage. The courage in this day and age, in this world, to be able to talk about such things. Do you know you're exercising courage right now, or do you have a different gear because your reality is just so healed and so shaped in so many ways? And I mean, we don't even have time to really get into the PTSD of things and all the complex of situational anxieties that you feel now and things like that. There's still echoes of this.
Yeah.
But I think the difference is you've got this awareness.
Yeah.
The awareness of your story and your authenticity is exemplary right now. And I'm in awe of it. Are you exercising courage in doing this today? Or is it something different than that?
Definitely. Yeah. An hour before I got here, I could start to feel myself getting a little anxious.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
That's how I would think it is.
Yeah.
But I can't sense it in you as you're telling the story.
Yeah. But I guess that's it. That once you engage it, you're fine. It's kind of like, well, do I need it or do I not need it? Like if I'm in a crowd of people, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of body language to read. I do get overwhelmed because I'm trying to read everybody's body language. So crowds are pretty tough. But there was a time where I couldn't go in an elevator if there was going to be one other person in there.
Wow.
So now, just to kind of continue on with that, teach what I was taught is, yeah, I will now ask them a question or say something to them. It's that pushing that envelope a little bit more, having that courage to make myself better.
Okay, so talk to me about the guy who's on stage, because the guy who's on stage is like the most confident person that I could imagine. And you're not just you're a showman on stage, and not just that, you're also leading the band. Like you're also that guy as well. You know, when did music come back into your life? And was that ordained by this group that you were in? Okay, yeah, this is something you love. It's time to bring it back as an exercise, or was it something that was just naturally added back in as you started to heal?
It was when I first went home after the hospital. I had time. I had nothing else to do. So I grabbed my guitar
in the dark.
Yeah. That didn't last very long.
At your rock bottom moment, you know, you're just out of the hospital, the rock bottom moment. And then the guitar comes back.
The guitar came back and it was quite therapeutic. And I wanted to challenge myself to be able to sing and play at the same time. So I spent 5 or 6 months working on that. And then, you know, once I started to get some of my friends back, you know, I tried to form a band with some friends, and that was a long project. They were going through their own lives, and it was tough, but it was something I really wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then joined a band. My wife encouraged me to do it. I was ready to sell all my stuff. I told her, I'm like, I'm getting rid of it all. And she's like, why don't you just answer an ad to see if somebody's looking for a guitar player? I'm like, okay. So I did. I was hired on the spot. And from there, it kind of snowballed and another band heard about me, and that's how I ended up here.
The difference of having someone in your life who encourages versus discourages cannot be measured.